Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to this week's Failed Critics Podcast. I'm Steve Norn. I'm joined this week by Owen Hughes.
Hello.
And what feels like the first time in ages, Paul Field.
You alright, fellas?
Yeah. When was the last time you were on?
It's been a while because we had one scheduled, then you had to go somewhere, Steve.
Yeah, I can't remember why
I think we were going to do a football one and you double booked and you like sent an apology.
That was it, yeah.
It's all Steve's fault, yes.
We'll have to do the football one somewhere, though.
Just spend all week watching fucking football, Phil.
Yeah.
The other thing is that Steve's managed to avoid watching Dangerous Games so far because of it as well.
That was the other thing
I'm
as well.
I'm saving it for the football special in time for next year's 2018 World Cup.
Did you watch it in the end, Owen?
No, I haven't watched it yet either.
We'll have to try and get that in before the end of the year.
Yeah, I'm not beholden to it like Steve is because of, you know, that was his booby prize for losing the quiz.
I will watch it when we do the football special. Which we will rearrange soon because, we like films and football. But this week, we're not doing football. We're doing spies in films as we round off the podcast with a triple bill of our favourite movie spies. Quiz, though, Paul is hosting as he ever does when he comes on now because he's very rubbish at answering film questions. He's very good at doing film quizzes.
Yeah,
that's fair enough, Steve.
Yeah,
I know, Owen, you're going to really, really love this quiz because it's on your favourite subject.
Well, that could be anything. That could be anything.
James Bond.
Is it? Oh, great. Great. I love that guy. Yep.
I know you do. However, I will say that most of them don't really require massive Bond knowledge. They merely require you trying to work out or guess, basically.
Yeah, I'm totally going to annoy people by getting Bond wrong. That's what's
I'm not a Bond fan either. I don't get it.
They're all guessable. Right. Mm. You ready?
Yes.
Before we start, the current score is me 1-0.
Yeah, and it's best of three. Yep.
Yeah.
Good luck, Steve.
Thanks.
Not so much you, Owen.
No.
Which of these three Bond songs achieved the highest UK chart position? Was it Writing on the Wall from Spectre by Sam Smith? View to a Kill by Duran Duran, or Skyfall by Adele? And Steve, do you want to go first?
Go on, and I'll go first. See, now I reckon, do you get a bonus point for saying where it came?
I will allow that.
Good, making up the rules as we go along. See, I don't even think it'd be Duran Duran. I think it's going to be Adele or Sam Smith. I reckon Sam Smith, and I reckon he got to number two. I reckon it was peak Sam Smith when that came out. So Bond and peak Sam Smith equaled top results.
Okay, Owen?
I think lots of people hated that song, though, whereas Skyfall seemed to be everywhere. I'm going to say Skyfall. And I'm going to go for a bonus point and say it was number one.
Okay, well, Sam Smith got to number one with Writings on the Wall. So it's a point for Steve. And Adele, she only got to number two with Skyfall. So no points for you, Owen.
But no. I didn't get myself a point.
No, you didn't get a bonus point, but you did get the right answer. Sam Smith. Yes. And Duran Duran also got to number two with A View to a Kill. So, adjusted for inflation, Skyfall is the highest grossing Bond movie. But what's the second? Owen? Bonus point if you can give me the amount. It's either Thunderball, Goldfinger, or Spectre.
Oh, man. I'll play it safe and say Spectre. Spectre. I reckon, I can't remember what that got. Let's say that got 600 million in total at the box office.
Okay. Steve?
I'm going to go for Goldfinger.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say 325 million box office.
Okay, well, you are both wrong. It was Thunderball, which adjusted for inflation would be $1 billion.
No way.
And next, yep, third was Goldfinger at 900 million. And a fourth, Spectre, at 800 million. But no points each.
That is insane money.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? When I saw that, I thought, what? But yeah, a lot of people went to the cinema back then.
Mm.
So, yeah. You know, it was peak Connery, wasn't it, Thunderball?
Yeah, yeah.
So, who was the oldest actor to play Bond? Was it Roger Moore in A View to a Kill, David Niven in Casino Royale, or Sean Connery in Never Say Never Again? And as we've done it so far, you can have a bonus point if you can guess the age. Steve, I think it's your turn to go first on this one.
I'm going to go with Sean Connery.
Mm.
And I'm going to go 58.
Okay. Owen?
I mean, it seems like the obvious answer should be David Niven. David Niven. I don't know how old he would have been. 65.
Right, okay.
He always seemed quite old.
Unsurprisingly, you are both wrong again. It was Roger Moore in A View to a Kill, who was 57. David Niven in Casino Royale was also 57, but just slightly younger than Roger Moore. And Sean Connery in Never Say Never Again was 53.
Oh, there you go.
See, out of a possible 6 points between you so far, you've got one.
But who's got that one?
You have, Steve.
And that's all that matters.
Right. Owen.
Mm-hmm.
Who declined the role of James Bond and cited the reason not interested in starring in action movies? Liam Neeson, Sean Bean, or Clive Owen?
See, now I think Sean Bean was offered a role as Bond. Oh. But then he was in a Bond film, so Liam Neeson, let's go Liam Neeson. He's always been one who's, prior to Taken, was a bit up himself, wasn't he? Yeah.
Steve?
So we had Sean Bean, Liam Neeson, and Clive Owen. I think it's Clive Owen, because it's not Sean Bean, because he was in a Bond film, and you can't have a Northern Bond like that. And you can't have Liam Neeson with his like weird kind of Irish accent. So it's got to be Clive Owen.
Right. It was actually Liam Neeson. However, they were all offered and all declined for various reasons. Clive Owen is because they wouldn't give him percentage points. And do you know what? I can't remember what Sean Bean's was, but there was a reason.
Because they had to survive.
One old guys.
They wouldn't kill off Bond at the end.
So Roger Moore, who was obviously the best Bond, suffered from which phobia? Hoplophobia, the fear of guns. Mastrophobia, the fear of breasts. Or galleophobia, the fear of sharks. Steve.
He definitely weren't afraid of boobies.
Right.
I'm going to say sharks.
Right. Owen, what do you think? Guns, tits or sharks?
I think it's sharks as well. Because he throws guns around.
Guns.
Oh, what?
You've still only managed to get 1 point each so far. Right. Last main question. Which Bond regular did I often see doing their shopping in Sainsbury's in Bexhill? Was it Desmond Llewellyn Q? Was it Bernard Lee M? Or was it Lewis Maxwell Moneypenny?
That's Owen first, isn't it?
Q.
Steve?
See, now I don't think it was Q because I think Q actually lived in my hometown, which is nowhere near Bexhill.
Yeah, it'd be quite a trek to go and do your Sainsbury's shopping, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, I might have got that wrong, or it might be a different Q, but definitely one of the Qs did, I think. So I'm not going to say Q, I'm going to say M.
It was Q.
Oh, right. Yes.
He had the house backed onto my kid's school just up the road. Right. We're now going to play a quickfire round of Bond or Bonk. You have to tell me whether these potential porn parodies are real or fake.
Right.
Steve, you're going first. You ready?
Yeah.
Poonraker.
Bond.
Does that mean it's real or fake?
Bond is fake. Bonk is real. Because if it's bonk, then you've gone porn is bonk.
Is real.
Yeah.
Right. Goldfinger me.
Bonk.
You only lick twats.
Bond.
Thunderballs.
Bonk.
Dr. No Panties.
Bonk.
The Spy Who Fucked Me.
Bonk.
The Living Fleshlights.
Bond.
A View to a Killer Arse.
Bond.
Octopussy.
That's both. Bonk.
Golden Shower Eye.
Oh, for God's sake. Bond.
Okay. Owen, mm-hmm. You ready?
I'm ready.
Are you ready to play Bond or Bonk?
Let's do this.
Poonraker.
Oh, Bond.
Goldfinger me.
Bonk.
You only lick twats.
Bond.
Thunderballs.
Bonk.
Dr. No Panties.
Bonk.
The Spy Who Fucked Me.
Bonk.
The Living Fleshlights.
Bond.
A View to a Killer Arse.
Bond.
Octopussy.
Bonk.
Golden Shower Eye.
Bonk.
Well, I'll put you out your misery. They were all made up apart from number 9. Octopussy was indeed there was a porn parody of that. However, as you both managed to pick that out,
yeah,
the final score is 3 points to Owen and 2 points to Steve. Well done,
yes!
Owen.
Yes. Oh, thank God.
Yes. Well, I'm glad that's over because I really don't want to have to say you only licked twats again.
Yeah. Well, thanks for playing Bond or Bonk. Time now for what we've been watching, where we take a look at some of the films that we've seen in the last week or so. This week it might contain a few new releases or a new release, as we're not doing a main review of any new releases. Paul, which British gangster flick have you seen this week?
Well, Steve, I actually watched a new Danish comedy called Dan Dream, which I've been waiting for ages, to be fair. For those of you who would have seen Casper Christensen and Frank Harm in Clown and then Clown Forever, which were sort of wildly successful, if indie, comedies from a few years back. They're both real comedians. They're both Danish. They're both going to be fairly popular in their sort of home country. And so it was a really weird story. They decided to make a film which is inspired by the production or attempted production of the world's first electric car, which is in real life was called the Hope Whisper. But in this film, it's called the Dan Dream. And the kind of the premise is Casper is like head of the head guy at an electronics firm, keeps coming up really good ideas, like things like the home computer. And the firm he works for just think he's crazy. They're saying, you know, nobody's ever going to have a computer in their house. And he up sticks, sets up on his own after bumping into Frank, who's riding a bike with a special battery attached to it, which he claims to be, you know, 5 times more powerful than any other battery going. And that leads them to come up with this idea of making an electric car. They kind of set up a little factory out in a little village in the middle of nowhere. And, if you are expecting Clown, then it's definitely not that. it is still very funny, but it's more sort of a matinee type humour. Although, to be fair, Frank does shit in a bidet and they do do loads of coke all the time. But it's really because those kind of moments are very few and far between. The rest of it deals with a very gentle comedy about these idiots effectively trying to build an electric car. You've got the massively camp guy who does all the design and the interiors, Frank who does the battery, Casper's in charge of them, the engineer's only got one arm, their financier is completely off his tits on coke the whole time, the women are all put upon and moaning for those of you who've seen Clown, Mia who plays Frank's wife in the show, she turns up as the mayor's wife who gets knocked about. There's a racial thing where, because Casper's married to an African lady, and the pain in his face every time that people comment about her and stuff. So there is a very light, serious side to it. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. Those guys really do know how to make a comedy. Tight 90 minutes. If you like Clown, you'll really, really enjoy this, but don't expect Clown levels of outrageousness.
A difficult second album, then, in a way.
Well, they did Clown. They did Clown Forever. They're currently recording the 7th season of Clown, the TV show. So I think it was just to do something a little bit different, but most of the people in it are from the films and the TV show anyway. I don't know if there's a lack of Danish actors or they just like working with the people they know.
And did the car end up looking like the one that Homer Simpson invented?
It's all based on a true story. And I genuinely didn't realise this until the end, until I actually saw the clips of what really happened. So that was a bit of an eye-opener. But yeah, it's crap, the car, obviously.
Okay, Owen, what have you seen this week?
As Paul may have described it in an email earlier when we were discussing this, and he called it a sex movie, it's not quite what it is. I watched a film by Brian Usner, who I mentioned on the podcast a few weeks ago because he directed the Return of the Living Dead 3, which I thought was great. I was really impressed with that. Because it was the first time I'd seen it since I was really young. And actually, I didn't realise how well it held up as like a different take on the zombie genre, the subgenre. So I thought, okay, I am going to check out a few more of Brian Usner's films because I've enjoyed stuff of his in the past. You know, I've liked the Reanimator sequels that he directed. He did the Dentist films, which I remember watching as a kid and... Well, not that young, but remember watching them when I was younger and thinking they were pretty freaky. So, yeah, I went back and found his directorial debut from 1989, which was on Shudder, which is Society. I guess you could call it a social commentary. It's basically a teenager who doesn't feel like he fits in with his family. He's from a rich family, but they don't really like him. He doesn't seem to be on the same wavelength as them. And he finds that actually in just society in general, he just doesn't fit in. Imagine being a teenager who doesn't feel like he fits in with society. But that is the commentary. Because what happens is society isn't an abstract concept. It is an actual amorphic blob thing of naked people who get together and consume the poor. For fun or sustenance. And he kind of gets embroiled in this... it's almost like Rosemary's Baby in that everyone in the town is in on it except him. Everybody knows about what's going on. But Bill Whitney, he's called, played by Billy Warlock, he's kind of the outsider in all of this. Stuff even like his sister... He finds evidence of his sister being involved in this kind of incestuous three-way with his mom and his dad. It's that kind of freaky, and that's why I think Paul referred to it as a weird
now
sex thing.
Now we're talking. Yeah. Tell me more. Mm-hmm.
Everyone is involved in this weird, like, orgy of the social elites. And so, yeah. I mean, it's just really freaky. It's got lots of I guess, like you would call it, body horror. People's faces kind of merging into other people's torsos and stuff like that. It's not overall like a fantastic movie, but what it is something that's, it's obviously got a message. It's not the most challenging concept. It's not the most like, it's not going to raise any awareness or answer any questions that people have. But what it is like saying, you know, this is how teenagers feel. Generally, teenagers feel like they don't fit in. It comes up with the answer as, you're not crazy, you're not weird, it's everybody else. And actually, if you take it as just like this weird sci-fi comedy horror thing, it's really enjoyable, it's really entertaining. It's got Brian Usner's finger marks all over it. If you've seen From Beyond, for example, which is just a really great sci-fi horror from 1986, a few years before, which he wrote... and was directed by Stuart Gordon, and they kind of teamed up on a lot of other films, including the Reanimator movies, then, yeah, give it a go. It's the same kind of humour as perhaps something like Basket Case. It also reminded me of The Stuff. So if any of those are kind of ringing bells for you, if you think that's the kind of thing you enjoy, then, yeah, check out Society. It's quite a short horror film. Totally worth a watch. I really, really enjoyed it. But, Paul... Your reaction then tells me you may have seen this before.
Do you know what? If I have, I don't remember it. I'm looking at the IMDb now. It's like from the late 80s.
Yes.
Although it is still an 18 certificate. Is that because they haven't reclassified it, or is that because it really is an 18?
I would say it probably is an 18, yeah. I mean, it's pretty grotesque in places. Because I guess it's like sexual kind of violence in a way. So yeah, it probably is still an 18. But it's,
well, as you fun. Never watch sex stuff, Owen, I will definitely watch it.
Yes. Yes. This is what gets me off. No, I'm not. That doesn't, that's my line. But no, it's just a great, great little film.
Okay. So this week I have seen a new release, and that was Logan Lucky. Owen, did you get a chance to see this in the end? I know you were talking about going to see it. But
I really did want to see this. This is Steven Soderbergh's film, isn't it?
Yes, the comedy with Channing Tatum, Adam Driver and Daniel Craig and many others as well.
Because he retired, didn't he, after Behind the Candelabra, the thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, that he retired from making films, and I'm using air quotes as I say that, because I think everybody knew that wasn't going to last. That was not going to stick.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not a surprise that he's back making feature movies, but is the enthusiasm still there, do you think? Is he actually...
It's good. It's not great. I mean, the first thing is, Seth MacFarlane is in this, and if you see him in a trailer for the film... And you're not perhaps up to date with cinema news and directors and everything. You might think this is going to be another Seth MacFarlane comedy, and it's going to be crap. Not really the case, actually. It's actually, I mean, there's nothing really original in it. It's about a guy called Jimmy Logan and his brother called Clyde, and for various reasons they're down on their luck and whatever, and they come up with a plan to steal some money from a local motor racing track on like their busiest day, and the money, everyone who's seen the trailer will know this, but the money is moved around using pneumatic tube system, and they find a way of basically breaking in and stealing the money. And they, you know, they get together a ragtag band of people to go about doing this. And they all have different reasons for wanting to steal the money. And the stealing of the money doesn't quite go according to plan. It's all quite predictable. Nothing's really new about it. But it is quite funny. It is quite charming. You know, you do kind of like, the characters are quite likeable. I didn't really get on with the Daniel Craig one, where he's, you know, putting on this American accent as this guy they have to break out of prison. But, you know, it's good. The plot works. Like I say, it's nothing challenging. It's nothing original, but it works. It's not. It doesn't feel overly long, even though it's a comedy that's coming in just shy of 2 hours long. It doesn't feel overly long. Channing Tatum's good. Adam Driver's good.
Does he play Adam Driver, or is he doing something different?
No, he's playing Adam Driver, but he's, you know, he's not. Well, yeah, a bit different. He's playing an Iraq war veteran who's lost one arm. So it's a bit, yeah, it's different to type, really. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I laughed a lot. I don't know how well it would stand up to repeat viewings, obviously, because I've not seen it more than once. I don't know if it'll, you know, be a film that keeps making you laugh every time you watch it. I don't think it would be. But certainly the first time you watch it, it definitely brings up a lot of laughs. It resolves itself in a nice way. There's definitely worse comedies that are 2 hours long. I did really enjoy it. But it's nothing original. It's nothing groundbreaking. It's nothing different. It's a kind of comedy you'll have seen many times before. It's a kind of heist film you'll have seen many times before. But it's still worth watching.
A return now to Triple Bill, and this week's theme is our favourite movie spies. And I think that could have been interpreted any way we wanted.
Yeah, not necessarily favourites. We just pick three spy films. Could be of any sort, any calibre. We're not restricting it necessarily to three favourites. Because I think sometimes it's fun to do favourites, like when we did Stephen King. It's fun to pick your three favourites, but I think when we have spies, it's quite a broad category, isn't it? Because you've got like spy thrillers, yes. You've got spy comedies. You know, it can open it up to, you could just pick three Bond films if you wanted to. But yeah.
Which I thought Paul probably has.
I thought it'd just be fun to see what people come up with, really.
Okay, we'll do this in round robin format. And Paul, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, which, no problem.
Which James Bond film have you picked?
Well, I've gone for my first pick is from 2006, a Dutch spy thriller directed by Paul Verhoeven called Black Book, which stars the, I have to say, amazing Carice Van Houten, who...
Do you just form a Big Breakfast presenter?
No, that's Denise Van Out. You've got to take your hat off to her because she does the film in English, German, and Dutch. She gets her tits out. She shaves her minge in front of a mirror so you can see what's going on, and she gets covered in shit. I mean, if you to get someone to sign up to be able to deliver all that, she gets, it's hats off from me. She plays a Jewish woman who sees her family all murdered by the Germans. And while these sort of Jewish people are trying to escape, this guy arranges escapes for them and they all get gunned down. She manages to escape. She then joins the Dutch resistance and becomes an infiltrator. She gets a job inside the German high command. It's just really, I think, probably Verhoeven's best film in terms of it not being completely ridiculous all the time. You know, it's not Starship Troopers or RoboCop. It's, you know, it's properly grounded. Really fantastic performances across the board. Most of the actors you won't know anyway because, you know, they're Dutch. It did get a nomination, actually. I think it was up for Best Foreign Language Film. Potentially, I can't remember. But it is the most expensive Dutch film ever made. And I love this bit in Wikipedia. It says, the Dutch public voted it the best Dutch film ever. Funny enough, the only other really good Dutch film that I genuinely love is, I think it's called,
a sex film.
It's not a sex film. It's also about the resistance. Is it Man of Orange? Is it Rutger Hauer?
Soldier of Orange. Yeah.
Soldier of Orange.
Which is also Paul Verhoeven.
Oh, well, there we go. I'd forgotten that. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Have you both seen this?
I've seen Soldier of Orange, and Black Book was on my watch list on, I think it was Netflix or Amazon, or it might, no,
it is on Netflix.
It was on my Love Film list, and I cancelled Love Film before it ever got sent to me, so Yeah.
Well, it's on Netflix. Mate, honestly, this is absolutely fantastic. It's incredibly violent, really clever whodunit, great as a spy, a standalone spy movie. Very, very violent, of course. Lots of sexy time. I know you're a big fan, Owen.
Totally.
And some minge dyeing and shaving. Lovely.
Mm. Well, there we go. I mean, that just makes it perfect, doesn't it? That's what I look for in all films, really. My first choice is... I tried to go with this one for kind of all modernish spy films or recent spy films, because I thought a lot of people might go... You know, Bond, although Bond's obviously up recent, I thought people would go the older Bond films or older films in general. The first one I went for was from 2012, and that was Argo, where Ben Affleck decided to write the theme tune, sing the theme tune by starring, directing, and producing the thing. And it is the based on the true story of the situation in the 70s revolving the US embassy in Iran. Ben Affleck plays Tony Mendez, a CIA agent who has to go undercover to get out a load of people who, six people who managed to evade capture or death from the Iranians storming the embassy or the embassy. And the way he did it was he pretended that he and they were a film crew looking at making a science fiction movie in that area called Argo. And I've seen it once or twice since it came up. I remember it coming out. Must have come out in the first year we did this podcast, but I remember us reviewing it on here.
We did.
And I just remember it being really, really very good, quite gripping, entertaining. I think they did take some liberties with the certain parts of the story and how true they were, sort of, you know, taking off from the runway with the Iranian guards on the runway trying to stop them. I remember being really quite tense, funny in parts. I remember really liking John Goodman and Aaron Arkin's characters as the kind of Hollywood people trying to put together this fake movie and make it convincing. That's my first pick.
Mm.
And Owen, your first choice?
So I decided to watch three spy films that I hadn't seen before. And it started so well. I found one that I knew I was going to watch, and I did watch, and I really liked, and I'll talk about that last. I'll save the best till last. But then I kind of ran out of time. And so this afternoon, whilst doing other things, I had to quickly watch two spy movies that were available to me on Netflix. Netflix doesn't have a great selection of 90-minute spy films. So I ended up watching two one utterly diabolical piece of shit. I watched I Spy from 2002.
You know what's going to happen now, though? Now you've watched two shit spy films on Netflix. All Netflix is going to recommend you now is shit spy films.
Tell me about it. And I really should have thought about it more, because I Spy from 2002, directed by Betty Thomas, who is known for directing the Brady Bunch movie, is known for directing Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Squeakquel. And also, she directed Dr. Doolittle. And I left that one till last because I Spy stars Eddie Murphy.
Oh, my God.
A 2002 Eddie Murphy.
As how many different characters?
He just plays one irritating character. He's a professional boxer who is called upon by the president to team up with a spy who's played by Owen Wilson. So Owen Wilson and Eddie Murphy in a buddy spy movie. A top secret spy plane is stolen. They have to retrieve it. That's the plot. It's a comedy, obviously. It stars also the lovely Famke Janssen in 2002, when she was at her kind of peak, I guess, because she was just after the X-Men movies. Also, it stars the often forgettable Gary Cole and the never anything but a bad guy, Malcolm McDowell. They're all in it too. I would like an I Spy to being like a Jackie Chan buddy cop comedy, just without Jackie Chan, without any of the fun or any of the cool stunts. So if you can imagine all of the wit and the charm taken away from a Jackie Chan movie, that's what I Spy is.
So you're basically saying it's a shit Rush Hour.
It's not even a shit Rush Hour. It's like a shit accidental spy. It's one of those awful Jackie Chan films. It literally like resorts as well to a scene where Owen Wilson and Eddie Murphy are just kicking each other in the balls. That is a recurring gag through the thing, is that they get hit in the balls. It's like the characters in Idiocracy came to our world and were given $70 million by Columbia Pictures to make a movie, and they came up with this. That's what it is.
If they can make man getting hit in balls not funny, they've done something really wrong there.
Yeah.
Well, because most of the time, a man getting hit in the balls is funny.
But it's so often. I mean, they must use that gag about like 8 times. It's like, come on. That's not comedy. And it's like, okay, I'm being very down on it. Some of Eddie Murphy's improvisations kind of made me chuckle. Some of them were quite funny. Because, you know, it's just Eddie Murphy doing his thing. And that's not always a bad thing. I mean, Eddie Murphy can be quite funny, even in some of his shitter movies. But it gets very tiring very quickly. So, yeah. Apparently, in the original TV series as well, that I read online, in the 1960s, the Eddie Murphy character was played by Bill Cosby. So, no comment either way. I just thought I'd point that out. It's a buddy spy film. It's not very funny. Got a very naff story. Doesn't go anywhere. A twist without any thought or consideration. It's just lame. It's just really, really lame. And it's screwed up my Netflix recommendations forever now. Any Eddie Murphy film that gets added to Netflix is going to be, hey, you liked Spy. You watched I Spy. Watch this.
You're an idiot, Owen.
Tell me about it.
God.
Yeah, no. I haven't got much sympathy for you.
Did you assume you were going to lose a quiz and you just watched it in advance? You can't bank them. You can't get
that's
credit.
True. I'm banking them. I'm classing that. So just in case Steve ever... I shouldn't have said anything, should I? Because then Steve might have found this out at some point on his own and tried to make me watch I Spy. And I could have pretended I'd never seen it before.
Paul, what's your second choice then?
My second choice is from 2005. It's a historical political thriller about the Israeli government's retaliation to the PLO Munich massacre in 1972. Steven Spielberg's Munich.
That was one of my choices as well.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm actually, see, this is why, Steve, this is why you're here. Owen, lowering the tone, watching terrible Eddie Murphy comedies, and here we are.
Me and you talking about things about murdered athletes and...
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I love this film, and I haven't seen it for a long time. And Eric Banner, who plays the Mossad... agent who's tasked with getting a little gang together to go after and retaliate against the PLO. He's given 11 names that he's supposed to kill, pretty much unlimited funds, and told he must keep receipts.
Yeah, it's the only thing that lets this film down is it's not a really good getting the gang together montage.
No, that's true. They do all sort of, they are just there.
Yeah. You need a getting the gang together montage if you're going to get a gang together.
The trouble is, it's quite long as it is.
Yeah,
and there's
a bit
of
too,
historical
it's a bit
stuff.
Too heavy for that kind of scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. But never mind.
Have you seen this, Owen? You must have.
Actually, it's one of the few Spielberg films I've not seen.
Ugh. Mm. Do you know what? Possibly one of his best as well.
Really? I'll tell you what, a Spielberg triple bill would be a good one. Would be an interesting one.
I would imagine we'd all come up with different films as well. You could easily, you know, end up with completely... Like, someone could go for all the sort of family movies and have, like, E.T. and Jurassic Park and stuff like that. And, and then others could go for some more cerebral stuff like you guys have.
There we go. There's an idea for a quiet week.
Let's do it.
That is a really good show. But going back to Munich, so you've got the squad of assassins, and then, they literally track down these guys one after the other, although it's slightly murky because to find out where they are, they employ the services of this family who seem to be able to find people for them. But they stress the whole time that they will not work for governments. They're completely neutral, and they don't realise that Eric Banner's character is of course being funded by the Israeli government. They think he says he's being funded by rich Americans. But he has so much work to do in this Eric Banner. His performance is absolutely outstanding. Yeah. And you've got, it's two and three quarter hours, something like that.
It's not a short one, is it?
No. And he's on screen a lot. But I have to mention Daniel Craig's dodgy South African accent.
Yeah, don't get Daniel Craig to do accents.
Oh, it does pull you out of the film a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He looks really young as well. Even though it's not that long
was
ago.
Was it 2006 it was out? So 2005. Yeah.
But if you want a long, involved, but, entertaining...
True story
spy thriller,
kind of.
Yeah. And as I said, I wasn't really a big fan of Eric Banner. I'd actually forgotten he was even in it, to be fair. But yeah, he's really, really good. He's got some acting chops on him and then some.
Okay, I'm going to move on to my, final choice now, as Paul picked, I picked one of mine. But then luckily for you lot, I can shut up. And I have gone for a film that has its sequel coming out pretty soon, and that is Kingsman, starring Taron Egerton and Colin Firth as two Kingsmen, who are spies. Matthew, it's based on a comic, isn't it, or a graphic novel?
Mark Miller's comic series.
Directed by Matthew Vaughan, and a real big and perhaps surprise hit when it came out, because I don't think anyone was really expecting Colin Firth to be able to pull off being such a cool, suave, but all action spy. I mean, the fight scene in the church that he's in is just great. And I just don't think people, especially probably as he's just not far off doing, people know him for stuff like The King's Speech.
Pride and Prejudice is the one that everyone labels him with, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And then he goes and does this. And it was just great fun. I don't think anyone could have not liked Kingsman. It was really good fun. It was entertaining. It was clever. I don't know if it was meant as a parody of Bond films or Bourne films.
I'd say it's
like
more like
that.
A pastiche,
But I don't know if it was meant as that, or if it was just like a spy film that was done in that way because it's based on a comic. And it just I don't.
But there was the thing about Samuel L. Jackson as the bad guy, wasn't it? That he said he'd always wanted to be a Bond villain and he'd never been offered the part of a Bond villain. But actually, he got to be a Bond villain by playing part in this, in Kingsman. He effectively was a typical Bond villain, wasn't he?
Yeah, from like the old school Bond films. Yeah.
The creepy kind like, of cat-stroking sort of...
Over the top, silly plot.
Yeah.
Sharks with lasers on their heads. I thought it was great. I can't wait for the sequel. I think that looks like it's going to be great as well.
Well, I mean, I hope so. Because, Kingsman was a surprise hit for me. I thought it, like you said, I didn't expect much from it. And then I came out of the cinema and thought that was a lot of fun. But the sequel, I mean, Mark Miller's stuff is generally very hit and miss. Sometimes within the same stuff, like it's part good and part shockingly bad. Sequels as well never really have been his forte. I mean, if you think of Kick-Ass 2, for example, what a load of shit that was. So
yeah,
yeah. I will keep my fingers crossed for Kingsman rather than live in expectation of it being as good.
Okay. Well, Owen, what's your second choice?
So I might have been a little bit harsh earlier when I said it was a load of old shit, because I don't think it's a film that's meant for me. But I watched, mainly because I kind of thought, had I seen this before, stuck it on, and kind of realised that, nope, I haven't actually watched it. It's Spy Kids from 2001.
Are you drunk, Owen?
I'm drinking whiskey at the moment to numb the
Owen,
pain.
You do know for Triple Bill, you are allowed to pick films that you've seen longer ago than, like, today.
Yeah. I just kind of put this self-imposed mission on myself to watch three I hadn't seen. Because I kind of, in the last few Triple Bills, I've gone back to a lot of films that I know quite well. And I thought it's a good opportunity to try something else out. A wasted opportunity is probably more accurate. Yeah, so obviously Spy Kids from 2001 is a kids film. It's not really meant for a 31-year-old miserable twat like me. But I kind of went to it because it's directed by and written by Robert Rodriguez, who is kind of one of my favourite directors, one that I like returning to. I mean, if you think of stuff like the Grindhouse stuff, like Planet Terror, and in fact, there's a reference to Machete in Spy Kids, which is kind of cool. You know, but he also did Desperado, which I really like, From Dusk Till Dawn, El Mariachi, all that kind of thing. But this has Antonio Banderas, who's one of his frequent collaborators. Also stars Carla Gugino. I don't know how to pronounce the name. You'd recognise her if you saw her face. They're the two parents. They're retired spies. They take a mission. They get captured by the children's presenter, Alan Cumming. And it's up to their kids to save them. They're spy kids, see? Like how the title says that they're kids and spies. Yeah, it's weird. It's like more weird than I expected it to be. There's like mutated people who are made to look kind of like blob things who scream, help me, in the background of this Teletubbies-style kids program. There are giant thumbs that are in the shape of people that are Alan Cumming's henchmen. It's got weird gadgets that you'd expect from spy spoofs. Well, I mean, actually, maybe I'm being harsh by calling it a spoof, because I think what Rodriguez did with Spy Kids is he just genuinely went out there. He set himself this task of making a good spy film for kids. And, yeah, I mean, it's got support roles for people like Danny Trejo, Robert Patrick, Cheech Marin, of course, is in everything. Terry Hatcher, Mike Judge is in this, Paul, just in case you were wondering. Mm. Yeah, Richard Linklater.
I have seen it. I have two teenagers.
Of course, yeah. Do they like it? Did they like it?
Yeah, they loved it.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. I don't think I enjoyed it, but it's not meant for someone like me. It's not meant for a cynical twat. It's meant for, you know, 9-10-year-old kids, younger perhaps, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But then it's because it's just full of like stuff that every little thing in it that's a bit quirky that I quite like. It then has stuff that so takes you back to, I'm not supposed to be watching this. Like people walking into stuff and people finding it funny. Or
didn't Rodriguez, isn't he on record as saying he made these for his kids?
For his kids, yeah. He wanted to make something that his kids could see. And that's all it is, you know. So yeah, I thought Alan Cumming was pretty great though. In that he plays a weird, creepy, eccentric sort of character, a bit like Willy Wonka, you know. Willy Cumming. Oh, sorry.
Well, I've got an idea for you, Robert. Buy them a fucking Xbox, the same as every other parent. You don't need to spend $60 million making them a film.
Yeah. Very successful series of films for him though.
I know.
It's kind of weird how successful they were. But,
what do you want for Christmas?
It's $60 million film.
$60 million film.
Yeah. Also, bit of trivia, it was the last film that he ever shot on film. He went completely digital from that point on. So, just in case anyone's interested in that sort of thing.
Okay. Paul, your final choice?
I've gone for Bond.
Of course you have.
Do you know which Bond?
Spectre.
I reckon it's going to be Roger Moore Bond.
Yep.
Where he goes to space on the moon?
No.
No?
Do you know, Owen?
The one with Christopher Lee.
No.
No.
It's from 1977. It's The Spy Who Loved Me, which is what I always like to think of as the disco Bond era. It's obviously the best Bond. It has the best opening sequence with the snow, the parachute with the Union Jack. Reading up on this, apparently at the premiere where they did like the Royal Gala, when that parachute opened after that amazing opening scene, like everyone stood up and started clapping and cheering, like including Prince Charles, which I thought was, you know, that was quite nice. You've got a great villain. He's got a fantastic lair that's underwater. You've got the best car, the Lotus Esprit, the white one with the little with the fins that where he that scene where he drives that out onto the beach and all the people are looking at him is just like peak Bond, fantastic. The song, Carly Simon, Nobody Does It Better, absolute banger, probably the best Bond theme tune. They did the soundtrack has Bond 77 disco remix of the theme tune. Come on, who doesn't want that? It's fantastic. Kurt Jurgens is a great villain. Barbara Barker is a great Bond girl. The settings are fantastic. You've got that scene in Egypt with Jaws. They go to Italy. They go to the Bahamas. They went all out on this one, and it is absolutely the best Bond. And anyone who disagrees is a fucking idiot. You have both seen this. I just want to check. You have seen this.
I can't remember whether I've seen it. We watched a load of I watched a load of Roger Moore films when we did a Bond special for whichever
Dude,
Bond film.
The car goes underwater. You'd remember the car, white car, yeah, with fins going. Yes.
Yeah. No. It's also it was the one that was spoofed with the third Austin Powers film, wasn't it? With the guy parachutes into the car and.
I've
was that
never
Tom
seen
Cruise?
An Austin Powers film.
You've never seen an Austin Powers film? Oh, well.
No, I don't like I don't like that. Those like 60s kitsch spoof stuff. I never liked them the first time round or now.
Well, okay. Well, I was going to say, otherwise we might have to redo the complete triple bill and insert some Austin Powers movies. But that's probably a giveaway to what's not in my final one.
Which is?
Which is The Long Kiss Goodnight. From 1996. Told you I'd save the best till last.
Well, it wasn't really hard when you picked Spy
yeah,
Kids.
Yeah, but it was between a kids movie and an Eddie Murphy movie, you know.
And you come with the bloody Long Kiss Goodnight.
Yes. Well, that was the first one I watched, like, about a week ago. And I thought, this is going to be great. I'm going to start with something I hadn't seen before. I knew. In fact, I was a little bit worried about talking about this because do you think it's a little bit of a spoiler to say it's a spy film? Because I know you've seen it before, Steve. Have you seen this, Paul?
When it came out 20 years
right,
ago.
Right, yeah. Literally 20 years ago. 1996, that was. 21 years ago now.
Well, it's so old that Gina Davis was still a thing.
Yes. Well, she was a thing because she was in two movies in quick succession. By Rennie Harlin. Rennie Harlin is the director of The Long Kiss Goodnight. He is, or was, also the husband of Gina Davis at the time.
Right.
Yes.
Is she now doing Panto in Bolton or something?
She is. I'll tell you what she is in. She's in the Exorcist TV series, and that is great. I really like that show. Second season of that's coming back soon.
I watched the first episode and binned it, so I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, it wasn't a great opener, but it got a lot better. It's really worth going back to.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of the best shows that's been on in the last few years. I thought it was awesome. But yes, no, she is in this. She plays a mom who has lost her memory, and she's made a life for herself. And it turns out she has a past where she was like a spy, an assassin. Teams up with Samuel L. Jackson again. He just gets in on all these films, doesn't he? Samuel L. Jackson's in it, surprise, surprise. He's also in another Rennie Harlin film. Rennie Harlin also did Deep Blue Sea, which has one of the best death scenes in it, which involves Samuel L. Jackson, I think. Yeah, I mean, I loved it. I don't think it's necessarily Shane Black's best film, But then, like, he's got such a high caliber, and he only wrote this. And I think part of the script was, I mean, there were lots of things in The Longest Goodnight that I recognise from other Shane Black films, and not just like the fact it's set at Christmas, not like it's got a strong female lead or anything like that. I mean, it's literally lines of dialogue which I've heard before, which seems weird because, like, this script was sold by Shane Black. It's quite infamous, this film, because he sold the script for $4 million, which was a, like, huge amount at the time. It was a record, like, blew all the other, like, script writers out of the water. Nobody had sold a film for anything close to $4 million. And off the back of that, he retired from screenwriting for years. But it wasn't just because he had lots of money. It was because he got such a backlash from other screenwriters who sort of accused him of selling out, or, like, it was, you know, they were just kind of jealous, I suppose, because, you know, it's not the most glamorous job being a screenwriter. They often get shit on by the studios, and Shane Black was out there lording it over them with all this, like, success. And, yeah, he just basically went, well, fuck this then. I'm just not going to work anymore. And he didn't come back for years. And, you know, obviously now we see him in stuff like, you know, he directed Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and The Nice Guys last year, which was awesome. And Iron Man 3 a couple of years ago as well. So, you know, he's very successful again now, but at the time he was the Lethal Weapon guy. And then he did possibly, I think my favourite film of his is The Last Boy Scout with Bruce Willis and Damon Wayans. And that is a great film, but not a spy film, unfortunately. But yeah, Long Kiss Goodnight was really, really good. I can't remember what you said about it, though, Steve. Did you enjoy it?
I did, from what I remember, yes. I did think it was good, yeah.
Hmm. I think my only issue with it is that the direction of it seems a bit boring. Like, the dialogue's very sharp, and there's lots of big set pieces, and Gina Davis is great in it, I think, and Samuel L. Jackson is Samuel L. Jackson. Literally calls himself a bad motherfucker at one point, which I guess is reference to Pulp Fiction. But, like, I can't really fault the people in it. I can't really fault the script so much as it seems a little self-plagiarised. It just doesn't come to life, really. There's no zip to it, which I'm just going to assume is because of the director. Maybe that's me being lazy, but I just felt like it needed something to make it stand out more, because it's not quite a neo-noir, although that's like what it feels like it's going for, and it's not like a big spy thriller either. But it was, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. Like, I enjoy all Shane Black stuff. But yeah, it was about 1,000,001 times better than the other two. It that way.
So yes, that's now all for this week's podcast, except for some recommendations. I am going to go with Netflix, where Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 has been added. Paul?
Do you remember Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
I do, yes. Yeah. Very fondly.
Yes, that was great, wasn't it? What happened to the guy who did that? Well, he's back, Eli Craig, and he's brought back Tyler Labine, but only in a small role. Adam Scott is the star of Little Evil.
Oh,
which,
yes.
What?
As soon as you said that, because I saw Eli Craig's name attached to that, and I was like, why do I know that guy? Oh, well, you literally just remind, that's him. It's that guy.
That's him.
Yeah.
That's that guy. That's what he's been, spent 7 years since his last film, I think.
Yeah.
It is basically a fairly gentle horror comedy with lots and lots of nods to The Omen.
Right.
I'll leave it at that. Is this supposed to be a recommendation?
Yeah.
I'm recommending it so you can see what he's done next.
Is it any good, Ben?
I'm not recommending it as being a really good film. It's,
oh, okay.
It's you could, good way to pass 90 minutes on a Sunday afternoon.
Oh, that's a shame, because Tucker and Dale versus Evil was just hilarious. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And Owen?
So I've already mentioned Shudder, Shudder.com, which is like a subscription horror service, exclusively horror. Tons of films on there. It's well over 150, I think. Lots of them very good as well. But they are the only place, the only streaming site, I should say, that you will get access to their exclusive of my film of the year, The Love Witch. The Love Witch is exclusive to Shudder at the moment. You can get a free trial. I would recommend giving it a go. Tons of like classic horror on there. Loads of Mario Bava and Fulci and all those kind of European guys, as well as I mentioned, Brian Usner. I watched Society on there. The Reanimator sequels are on there. All three Basket Case films are on there, for example. But it's also got lots of quality modern horror. And The Love Witch is, I mean, I don't know if I'd call it a horror film, as more like a supernatural romance thriller. Annabella's kind of twisted, sexy thriller is like just amazing.
On that note, that is the end of this week's podcast. Owen, next week, are you having a week off because I'm on my holidays?
Unfortunately, no. I don't get a week off. You get a week off. I say unfortunately. Actually, it's Andrew Brooker and Liam are back, but it is in the cinema. The new adaptation of the Stephen King novel.
Yes.
Getting lots of good reviews, so I hear. So, yes, very much looking forward to it.
Yes. Well, enjoy that, guys. I will be on a beach and not thinking about this podcast at all. Not to be too disparaging to any of you.
The Failed Critics Podcast is presented by Steve Norman and Owen Hughes, with contributions from different guests every week, with original music provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com from the track The Bandit, remixed by James Yule, who you can find at jamesyule.com. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Failed Critics, on iTunes and all good podcast apps, or you can check us out at failedcritics.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a rating or a review. And why not check out our sister podcasts, Character Unlocked and Field and Mullinger's Underground Nights, from the Failed Media Network of podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Where you have to tell me whether these potential porn parodies are real or fake.
Right.
Steve, you're going first. You ready?
Yeah.
Poonraker.
Bond.
Does that mean it's real or fake?
No, fake. If it's bonk, Bond is fake. Bonk is real. Because if it's bonk, then you've gone porn is bonk.
Is real.
Yeah.
Right. You ready, Steve?
Yeah.
Right. Poonraker.
Bond.
Gold finger me.
Bonk.
Oh, I'm so immature.
Sorry?
I said bonk.
What you said, Steve.
Bonk.
The last syllable of your word's cutting out. Bonk. All I can hear is bon.
It's bonk.
So it could be either.
He's edging his bet. Hoping you'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, my God. Do you want me to start bonk. This again? You just have to, like...
Yeah.
Fuck off. This is turning into a shambles. Right.
Oh.
Steve.
Yeah, let's play Bond or Bonk.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.